Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. As the gentleman said, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici here with my favorite dentist, Dr. Randolph Aguilera, for what, our fourth or fifth show?
I think it's our fourth.
Starting to lose track.
Yeah.
We're going to discuss today advantages of the zirconium implants over titanium. A brief review, gang, so listen up. This is going to get technical today, but we know you're going to follow. Get to the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com.cc. And look at the pictures. That way you can really understand this. Brief review. Get to the website. You're on the pictures now. Brief review. What we concluded last week, or at least the point I'm going to make, and I think Dr. A is mostly backing, is when in doubt, save the tooth. And that means if you have to get a root canal, and that root canal can be done correctly with all the giblets and gravy of what done correctly means, consult the last show. Keep the root canal, preserve the cranial rhythm, preserve as much of your natural, God-given tooth as possible. If not, if that root canal goes south, if it hurts, if you've tried other solutions like apicoectomies, so on and so forth, and it doesn't, and you have to pull that tooth, or that tooth cracks, if there's some sort of a fracture in the root, and you got to pull that tooth, our vote unanimously is to put the zirconium implant in. Why? Well, in the tradition of teeth, let's start with picture number one. Let's go back to the tradition of teeth. There is an artist's humor, the satire. But really, that's not satire because that's the way people did it traditionally. Some guy with a pair of pliers came in and pulled it, and we laugh at that. But that's literally 150 years ago, even today. Look at picture number two. There's a guy. God bless him. Look at that. That's the number of teeth he may have taken out by himself. Think of what you know now about cranial rhythms, about preservation of tooth against decay, against how to do a crown correctly, how to do a root canal correctly. Today we're going to get into the implant correctly, because when you look at, ultimately, picture number five, that's you in the audience today. Somebody that we're talking to today has a big hole. A tooth is missing. And you're debating whether you put that bridge in. And what's that bridge? It's a false tooth that crosses. Again, you're looking at picture number five. A bridge is a false tooth that crosses right into that empty space, and it hangs off the two teeth around it. Doc, that's probably the right side, so that's nine and
that's
tooth, seven and nine?
That looks like it's tooth number six, actually.
Six, so on either side, you have tooth number?
It's six or seven. It's hard to tell from it.
See, I'm going to vote for seven. I'm going to vote for that seven. And on one side, you got eight, and on the other side, you got six.
Correct.
And in the old days, before you felt confident with implants, before we really had a ceramic implant, you would hang a bridge on that. And the problem with that was what? You had to grind down both those teeth. If they were virgin teeth, if they didn't have crowns, if that was good enamel, you had to cut that down and hang the crown. Now you had three teeth in a unit, all of which are going to block the individual flexion extension of each tooth. But that's what you had to do. You had to put on a bridge, and if you lost two teeth, you'd have to put on a longer bridge, and the longer the bridge, the more you'd lock up that relationship between the hypothalamus, pituitary, pineal, and the rest of your body. So in the old days, before Dr. Aguilera and others helped evolve the implant medicine, you put a bridge in, and you lost that cranial rhythm. It hurt. Worse yet, if that bridge was across the front of your mouth, you lost a vital dynamic relative to the locations of the teeth in the cranial rhythm. But today you'll start to think about an implant. Now let's take a look at implants. Here's the classic implant. Go to picture number 11. Picture number 11. That's a titanium implant. Dr. A and I will be arguing against the use of that. Although, yes, it's your decision, but there's some real things for you to think about. Dr. A will be explaining. There's your classic titanium implant, the screw that goes into your jawbone, that piece in the middle called the abutment that screws in to the implant, and then months later, after the bone heals, hopefully, you have somebody mold you and then put crown on, and you're left with picture number 10. This is picture number 10. That's the zirconium versus the titanium implant. And that titanium you're looking at has problems that we want to start to talk about today. First problem is the micro gap. Now I'm going to, Doc, which picture do you think we ought to start with to explain the problem with titanium, this micro gap?
Okay, let's start 14, with 15.
15?
Okay. No, with 15. The problem is this, okay, as we go back to the beginning, you have three pieces in a titanium setup, okay? You have three pieces as far as the implant is concerned, fourth if you want to count the crown. That part that gets screwed into the bone, as you see that picture there, that's literally called the implant. So that's the part that is underneath the gum and into the bone. But you can't put a crown on that because there's no post. Well, the post is referred to as the abutment. So the crown actually has to fit onto a post or the abutment. But how do you get the abutment into or secured to the implant? Well, the abutment now has to be screwed onto the implant. So where they come together, where the abutment meets the implant and the screw goes down microscopically. Now we can go to the other picture.
Let's just take a look at that screw for just 1 second. All right, go back to picture 11. You want to just point
actually,
out that.
So what this is actually...
Picture 11 now.
On picture 11, what you're looking at is the on the left side is the implant, and this is actually a healing abutment, but it gets screwed into it, okay? It doesn't really make any difference. It gets screwed in. Now, there's two ways to go. There's some of these implants we'll look at later where the abutment, there's a hole right through the abutment, and there's another screw that goes right through the abutment to screw it into the implant. Here, this abutment is actually literally screwed onto the implant, and now that we have a stump or the post, if you will, the crown on the far right side gets cemented on top of that. But where those two come together, where the implant on the left meets the abutment in the middle where they get screwed together. Now, do they fuse together? No, but microscopically, you have a space where the bacteria hang out.
Okay,
let's go to that picture.
That's perfect. The bacteria. Let's go to picture 16 and look about what the industry understands as a problem. It's not that they're telling you. It's not that when you go in and you get the one-day implant, which we're going to have a good sort of laugh at today, the place you go where you walk in with pussy gums and rotten teeth, and they're broken, and you look like, God bless him, the guy in picture number 2, and you leave with a shining new model-like perfect teeth, and you get the miracle of the one-day implant. They know about infections in the bone, but there's this notion about infections at this gap that Dr. Aguilar was describing. Look at picture 16. This is just a standard sort of advertisement for a company that wants to sell pieces to your implant, and they talk about a Morse taper providing this hermetic seal that bacteria cannot break through. That's probably not true, but that they hope can't break through, so there's less microbial ingress, meaning less microbes eating into this space. What space are we talking about? Dr. A just described that space. Let's look at the picture.
The micro gap, yes.
The micro gap. Let's look at the picture that Dr. Aguilar was referring to. Here's the micro gap blown up, I think, beautifully.
Picture number 20.
Picture number 20, look at that. I don't know if that's an electron micrograph.
No, that definitely is electron.
Okay. That's as good as the technology gets to show us 20 angstrom units, or that's micrometers. That's back to school for
That's
me.
That's a real small space is what that is.
You bet.
Microbial.
And that's enough space for what?
For the bacteria to hang out and accumulate. And what that does is that accumulation of that bacteria there, in addition to the beginning of a biofilm, but what it does is it irritates the gums. And now you get a chronic irritation of the gums, and chronic irritation of the gums leads to the irritation of the bone. So two things go on. You've got irritation of the gums, they get red, they start to recede, and you get irritation of the bone, which starts to recede. And this is what led the industry to try to get away from titanium, not so much because of the micro gap and the, because of the problems with bacteria collecting there, but the fact that you had a recession, and now you had a white crown, especially in the front tooth that we talked about on that example of where we had number seven missing. The white crown goes over the titanium abutment, which is gray. Titanium is this grayish color. And it's connected to the abutment, which is gray, and the implant, which is gray. So now you have a white crown right at the gum line, and now you start to get this recession. The gum starts to recede, and pretty soon it starts as a dark shadow right at the gum line. And then, worse yet, if you get the bone to recede, now you have recession. Now, on a natural tooth, we talked about this earlier, if you get gum receding, you expose the cementum, but you look at more of a yellowish color underneath the white enamel. But on an implant that has a titanium abutment and a titanium implant, what happens is you see gray. So now you see the gray, ugly look of the abutment, and worse yet, the gray of the implant. Patients
and if these
did
were
not
on
like
the,
that.
Yeah, and if these were on the front teeth,
exactly,
it was even worse. I love that description.
So that's what led the industry to say, we have to come up with a better answer to this. And they knew that zirconium oxide, which has been around in medicine for a long time, they used it in hips for, you know, 20, 30 years at least. So they said, let's adapt this to the mouth. So, but they weren't still thinking about this was driven by aesthetics, by looks. They didn't want to have this issue of this gray around the neck of the tooth. So what they decided to do, let's make the abutment out of zirconium oxide. So the part that gets screwed onto the gray titanium implant on the bottom in the bone, let's make that white. And that enjoyed quite a bit of success for a while. But still what? You had the micro gap because you're getting the abutment screwed onto the implant.
As long as you have that screw, you're going to have a micro gap. As long
exactly.
as you have a micro gap, you're going to have calculus or plaque buildup, which is effectively the biofilm. But we're not the only people that are talking like this. Take a look. Hopefully you're on the website. That's straighttalk.cc, not .com. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is my favorite dentist, Dr. Randolph Aguilar. We are discussing, we're actually setting you up for zirconium implants to the rescue, but we're giving you a brief history here of how the zirconium implants evolved over the decades and for what reasons. And oddly, ironically enough, it was simply a cosmetic aesthetic issue, whereas as these infections, these biofilms at the micro gap built up, you'd have your bone around it receding. In other words, the microbes would eat the bone. Their toxins would dissolve the bone. They'd eat the bone, and you'd be left with this ugly gray color. And that's why you paid for that nice implant, to cover up those rotten, stale teeth that broke. So this was much to the dismay, and the industry went to look at it, not from a health standpoint. But from a health standpoint, others have been talking. Take a look at the top of the pictures there. Click to view the full article on Weston Price supports zirconium implants. Now, Weston Price, that's the same Weston Price that doesn't want you to get root canals. Because of those infections in the tubules, even if the root canal is done correctly, they may well still be sticking to the notion of pull the tooth, pull the tooth. But they do support the zirconium implant. Take a look at why. It's not just us. This isn't our opinion. Just our opinion. Just pull that article up, scroll down, and what I've done is I've parentheses different pages here. Go to page number two, the top of page number two. So go to the article up at the top and go down page one. Go to page two, excuse me. Go to page three, the top of page three. Weston Price talking about the Institute and a dentist writing for the Weston Price Institute, thus He had to gain admission into the magazine. If Price didn't support this, he wouldn't get it published in the Weston Price magazine. The disadvantage of multiple parts, meaning this abutment you have to screw in, whether that abutment is a ceramic or whether it's titanium, the disadvantage of this screwing in is the potential for biofilm accumulation, the inflammation that results of it, infection even worse, where different fixtures or parts connect. Now, that's what we're talking about. Now, if you've got four or five implants and your body's not reacting, boom. Now, look at this claim here under zirconium implants. Ceramic implants retain less plaque and calculus than titanium, resulting in healthier gums and overall teeth. The rough surface of zirconium integrates or attaches itself exceedingly well to the jaw. Doc, I don't know how your periodontists today and oral surgeons, I don't know how they argue that the ceramic implant's not the way to go. I guess it's like everything else we've seen. It takes time for people to change their viewpoints.
It takes time for these to go in. What happens is, ideally, because of the zirconium oxide, the part that the zirconium oxide implant, and whether it's the one piece or now the toothpiece that's been, you know, in the marketplace since last year, July 2014, we have a viable two-piece. And we'll talk about the advantages of one-piece versus two-piece. But the issue is simply that the surface of the surface of the zirconium oxide implant that gets screwed into the bone is laser. It's laser treated. So what it does is it makes sure that it has the proper roughness, it has the proper texture, so that then the bone osseointegrates, or the bone, your natural bone, knits to the actual zirconium oxide far superiorly to the than it does to the titanium. But yet on the top part, on the part that the crown fits on, the part that is right up against the gum and up against the bone, is the abutment that can be so highly polished. And that the fact that then you do not get the biofilm accumulation, you do not get the bacteria accumulating because it's so highly polished that it's just so biocompatible. And part of the problem, and we actually don't have pictures of this, but I recall that part of the issue when I first started doing these implants is the body tissue loved the zirconium oxide abutment so much it would overgrow it.
Ah, now you see, now that's worth, if you're in the audience listening, it's these little things. This has been my experience over 2.5 decades in holistic medicine. You listen to people talk, you read books, and 60% of it goes in one ear and out the other. Something attracts you, but you forget it. Every now and then, somebody drops what you call a clinical pearl. Now, you just dropped onto me a clinical pearl. My brain lights up. I never forget clinical pearls. You can walk around with some doctor for a year and get two of those, and it's worth everything. Listen to what you just said. In the great debate between whether or not the bone will osteointegrate into this intrusion, this zirconium or titanium implant, all the debate about which one osteointegrates, from your soul to my ears, I just heard you observe that after you laser treat that area,
correct,
in addition to the zirconium implant, often enough, you see the bone overgrow. It's like the bone growth goes berserk.
As well as the tissue. So it's then when after the osseointegration period, that we have to actually go in and remove some of the gum so that we can expose the bottom of the abutment so we can have a much better fit of the crown.
You know,
the other thing you did mention, which is really important, that in this whole procedure, it's part of the protocol is that we are laser treating. Before we actually put it in, there's laser treatment. After we put it in, it's laser treatment. Why? Because of the biostimulatory effects of the laser, as well as the fact that it kills bacteria.
I am going to get my first implant. I've waited for the whole evolution of this. Last night when we were finished, I was just so psyched to do this now. You guys, you and Dr. Mehta, have this down slick. I think this is the slickest thing that you guys do. Of everything we've discussed since we started with how to prevent tooth decay, to me, this is the slickest thing. It really, and when you compare it to the titanium implant, I mean, this is a mind blower. Look at picture 19. Let's look at picture 19. People out there getting titanium implants. Worse yet, titanium implants put in one day. Do you in the audience understand the absolute insanity of this? Now look at this. The typical two-piece titanium implant connection. Look at how deep into the gum they have to put that. In other words, it's well below the gum. And look at what it's saying on the right. Titanium implants are placed so deep in the gum in order to hide the metal color. It's difficult to brush, and for this reason, the connections tend to produce Hallett bad breath. This connection has been proven to accumulate bacteria in all kinds of situations with poor or very good oral hygiene, and in any kind or brand of titanium two-piece. Look at how deep that has to go, and that's where you put and screw in that abutment, and in that abutment is the microgap, and it's all stuffed underneath the gum, and you are going to have a festering biofilm for the rest of your life, in addition to bad breath, bone recession, periodontal disease, and everything else that comes with it. Now look at this. Look at what happens when you put in a titanium implant. Look at where they'll leave the tooth. Let's go to a nice titanium implant. A nice
zirconium oxide.
Zirconium implant. And I will just show that piece. Look at that. We are now on picture number 23. Look at picture 23. Now that is just the zirconium implant put in there, correct?
That's correct.
There's
the
no abutment. So we're comparing now what I just showed you with the microgap. Do you see how that ridge on the screw on the implant is not beneath the gum? It's right at the surface of the gum. Am I correct, Doc?
That's exactly right.
That's the distinction between that. And then if you go back to that other picture, kind of looks like a toilet bowl, picture 19 there. You see how deep below the gum that's placed? And that's what they're saying. Now, this is how someone, Dr. Mehta, Dr. Aguilar, experienced in these procedures, is going to place their zirconium implant right at the level of the gum and not down deep. Now, Doc, explain. This is really the coup right here.
Well, it's cleansability. Look at that. You should be able, you can even look at the tissue. The tissue is just so adapts to around the implant. The tissue really likes that. It's kind to it. It's biocompatible. It really adapts to the implant nicely. So now when we go ahead and put in the abutment, you say, well, then what's the difference? It's a two-piece. Remember, this two-piece has only been available since last year, July of 2014, the two-piece through Z-Systems. I can't speak to Cerarroot, which is the only other FDA-approved company in the U.S. But what happens is the abutment gets bonded in. It just drops in. There's
Let's look at that picture. Picture 24.
So if you look at picture 24, there it is in the middle. Picture the little item to the right. That's called the healing abutment. We won't discuss that right now because that's something while it is osseointegrating. But now we're actually going to put the abutment in. So the abutment doesn't get screwed into the implant. It actually gets pushed in and bonded into the implant. So what we're doing, what do you mean it gets bonded? It's just like when we put a ceramic crown on a tooth. How do we get it to stick to the tooth? Well, we use a bonding adhesive, okay? It's a resin adhesive, not a cement, but literally like an epoxy, a base and a catalyst that's water insoluble. So that gets put around the collar of that abutment and it gets pushed into the implant and now it gets sealed. It gets sealed into the implant. Now it's the same thing as a one piece again. There is no micro gap. You're not screwing it on and tightening it down. It's actually getting bonded in to the abutment, gets bonded into the implant.
So
now
there's
no micro gap.
So slick. So you're looking at picture 24. You're looking at the middle of that picture, not the extreme right with that little screw. That's something else, but the middle picture. Dr. A is saying instead of screwing a titanium abutment or a zirconium abutment into a titanium screw, you're just going to slide a zirconium abutment in and then bond it.
Correct.
Making it water insoluble. So your saliva and all the other water-like substances that are going to be exposed to it are not going to eat it away. Now let's compare
bacteria
this.
Bacteria is not going to get into that gap. There is no gap.
There is no gap. Not to mention another aspect. When you have something like picture number 19, So let's go back to the toilet bowl. Let's go back to picture number 19. When you go and have that in your mouth, well, come on up to the top and take a look at one of the articles, corrosion in dental implants. This is not a little thing. This is huge. This is studied in a serious way. Doc, chime in if you want to say something about corrosion, but the zirconium over time is going to start to dissolve, meaning
The titanium is.
The titanium. Look at this. Corrosion. I'm reading from the abstract in this article. Corrosion is the deterioration of a metal that it undergoes as a result of the surrounding medium, which causes the release of ions into the microenvironment. No metal or alloy is entirely inert. In vivo, meaning in your body, corrosion phenomenon at the interface are particularly important, blah, blah, blah. And that's exactly what you have much, much less of if...
You don't get that with the zirconium oxide inside.
We can
because
even
it's
say that's
ceramic.
Strong.
You're not getting the corrosion. There is
we
no
just
corrosion breakdown
don't
byproducts.
Have corrosion. That's huge. Because your immune system reacts to the release of those ions. Another reason you're going to have an inflammatory response. So when you're looking at something like picture number 19, what you're headed for, number one, is corrosion because you're using titanium. Number two, you're looking at infection because of this little micro gap. Number three, and here's another one. We have great pictures to explain this. Doc, I'll have you go with this. When you put a titanium implant in, you place it. Okay, below the gum.
So much deeper, and therefore that micro gap is really in a place where you can't have any possibility of keeping it clean.
The only time
that you'll get to that is after the gum recedes and the bone recedes, and that causes a major problem. You know, we have this issue of the titanium and the ions leaching out and all the issues associated or potentially negative issues associated with titanium. There are plenty of websites on the internet. We don't have it up here, but perhaps after the show we can post it on this particular
site. It's also mentioned in that Weston Price article on top.
Exactly.
The immune system response.
You can go on. I have one of my really good patients we've done a number of implants on. And she's been on a blog site that has literally taken the stories of, you know, obviously they're anecdotal, but there's no, you know, science behind it. But listen, we don't need science to be able to have patients come and say, I had an implant put in that was titanium, and I had all these issues, but all these issues are resolved when it was removed. So you get a chance to really look and read and talk to and interact on this blog with, you know, real patients. And so we'll get that posted after the show today and put it on this particular page so they can go to that, because it's been an invaluable resource for a lot of patients who just have questions about implants and who have questions about the potential negative side effects with the titanium implants, which you just do not get with the zirconium oxide.
Let's look at this. If it's done correctly, go to picture number 30. And actually, let's look at picture number 29. Let's look at picture number 29. Doc, could you just state what that is? Picture 29.
So what you're looking at there is the implant that's been placed. Okay, this is a good representation.
There's no abutment on that.
There's a good representation of the implant. Okay, and then what we're going to do then is place the abutment into that, and then on top of that is where the crown fits. And then
all right,
that's
so
what you see what it looks like on the right side. Now, if you go to picture 30, you can see the abutments. Okay, the
picture 31 is even better because it's just one abutment.
Okay. But what you're looking at is just look at the tissue, how well it adapts to the abutment. And that's what makes it so nice, especially in the anterior area. So this is a tooth that is up in the anterior area. This is a first premolar on the upper left. This is tooth number 12. And that's in the visible area. It's not like it's a, you know, wisdom tooth where it's hidden in the back of the mouth. You can definitely see this. So that when the crown goes on and you get the adaptation of zirconium oxide crown, on top of a zirconium oxide abutment that's been placed into a zirconium oxide implant, you get this beautiful, wonderful tissue adaptation. The other nice thing about these zirconium oxide implants, especially these by Z-Systems, is that if you do need to do any kind of modification to that abutment after it's been placed, so you need to have a little bit more occlusal clearance, or on an anterior tooth, you need to have a little bit more the clearance on the lip side or on the tongue side, you can go in with a special diamond burr and still modify those abutments to get the clearance that you're going to need to have a good crown adaptation.
I want to make sure everybody understands what we mean. You're looking at picture number 31, and that white thing there on 31 is the abutment, right? That abutment was placed in and bonded, not screwed in. That abutment is zirconium. The implant, which is screwed into the bone, is zirconium. There's no micro gap. And what Dr. A is saying now is, suppose that abutment was so long that it bumped the opposing tooth. That's no good. And with zirconium, you have this wonderful advantage, and you can take it from there, Doc.
You can go in there with a special diamond and modify that. You can shorten it. You can do you can prep it like an actual tooth. You can actually literally prep that abutment as if it were a natural tooth to be able to give you the occlusal clearance that you would need to have a proper crown put on.
And you can't do that if you happen to have a zirconium abutment.
Titanium
abutment. You can't do that.
Correct.
Okay, that's important. There's another advantage. So you got to remember all these advantages. No biofilm. No micro gap, uses of the laser, then you can actually ground the abutment. You can configure the abutment so it doesn't proprioception to the other tooth. It doesn't hurt the other tooth. You're also going to have no ion leakage and thus set yourself up for an inflammatory immune reaction. They start adding up. Now, here's another big one. And this, of course, any good implant specialist would take care of. But I think Dr. A does things, along with Dr. Mehta, that I think really, really cover this. And I think this is the part that's skipped. I'm going to harp on this. You tend to not harp as much because you take it for granted. I don't, because shopping around and looking, here, gang, is the big issue. When you get a tooth extracted, you have to have an oral surgeon that knows how to debride and graft. I don't think, from my experience, that is, across the board, a unified phenomenon. And I think there are different ways to graft bone. In other words, when you have an extraction of a tooth, you're going to pull out the entire tooth. You're going to have somebody go in and clean out that tooth socket. And you may not have enough bone. Remember, you may have an infected tooth that needed an extraction. There may not be enough bone for anybody to, 6 months later, screw an implant into. So you're going to need what? A bone graft. I don't think this is anything to be overlooked. I don't think they're necessarily across the board successful. But here's my point, and then I'll have Dr. A pick up. Here's the point. When you go and you get these one-day implants, or you go anywhere for an implant, they need to make sure that the bony socket can sustain that screw. And that after that screw is put in with the abutment, after the screw and the abutment are put in, you don't go hanging a crown on that too soon. You have to make sure that that screw takes to that surrounding bone. And that'll bring us to picture number 33. Take a look at picture number 33. Doc, you take it from there.
Okay, what we've done is we've gone to the very end of the procedure here. And then we're going to work backwards from this, because I think this is really important. This is such a critical issue that you do not have an implant placed and then go have an abutment placed and then have a crown put on that until that implant is totally osseointegrated, that the implant is totally knitted to the bone. So on an upper implant, it's about a 6-month osseointegration period or healing period. On a lower, it's about 3 months. But I said about. So how do you know? How you know is that there is a device in the marketplace.
Picture 33 you're looking at.
That's 33. It's called a perio test. It actually does these little taps on the tooth and then gives a kind of a sonar response back to the machine so it can read. So it can determine whether it is truly, the implant is truly knitted and osseointegrated, so that you're not premature in putting on the abutment, that you're not premature in loading that abutment with a crown on it. So that that's the worst thing you can do. If it needs to give a little bit more time to osseointegrate, then you know, you back off. So it's 3 months about. So maybe it need to go 4 or 5 or 6 or 7, depending if it's an upper. So the bottom line is, this is the way to determine this with this particular test. It's called perio test. And this, when I work with Dr. Mehta, he does not send a patient to me to bond in the the implant abutment, okay? He does not send the patient to me until he's checked that patient with the perio test and he's given me the okay that this osseointegrated.
Beautiful. Let's go to this other picture here. And does every dentist use, does every implant specialist use a perio test?
No.
All right. I see at least five people a year who have failed implants. And they have osteomyelitis. In other words, that micro gap, it's really more than that. That screw that goes into the bone, when that screw isn't done correctly and the bone can't handle it, it infects. And once you have an infection because you had it incorrectly placed or the timing was inappropriate, you end up with a biofilm, an osteomyelitis in the cavity. And once you have that, you have a whole other problem. I see about five of these a year like this. Let's look at picture number 32. Picture number 32. And that's how you...
That's the perio test, checking the osseointegration of the implant. So that's what we want to be able to do.
It's going to measure, I guess, what, the flex in there or the vibration?
It actually, what it does is it measures the vibration, correct? So what you do is you take it on, the test goes on the teeth on either side, so you get a determination of how the bone in that particular patient reacts and sounds to the tapping. So the bottom line is it gives these little readbacks, if you'll, feedback from the tapping and back, like a sonar, if you will. It taps it, and then it gives you back the sound that gives it or that reading of the vibration that lets you know that it is now totally integrated to the bone. And what do you compare it to? You compare it to the teeth on either side. So you know how a natural tooth, you know, responds in that same, to the same test. So the bottom line is you now have a way to not subjectively but objectively determine whether that tooth on either side are normal and natural, and more importantly, that the implant is osseointegrated.
I can't say enough of the importance of this step. And, you know, I think you take it for granted because you and Dr. Metter are so diligent about this. I see it from the other end, and I look at it as the commercial advantage of skipping that 3 to 6 months. And that's if you're pretty healthy. Suppose you're not healthy. Suppose you're not sleeping, you're not eating right, your vitamin D is low, your pHs are off. Suppose you have infections. Suppose there's an osteomyelitis in that oral cavity, in that tooth socket, because the root canal you have that ultimately demanded an extraction was debrided incorrectly by an oral surgeon who just wanted to pull it and stuff a titanium implant back into your bone, and then it sits at your door. You're dealing with a lot of variables that will determine whether or not that bone is going to be ready for the abutment and for the crown that will go on that later on. So this perio test is one angle on this, not to mention having a dentist, having an oral surgeon, having a team around you who are going to be patient, who have the guts to tell you you need to wait. Because you don't want to wait. You want to come in and walk out the same day with perfect teeth. And that's what you have advertising all over AM radio today. People who simply walk in with destroyed faces and come out smiling like young models. That is bunko. Very often that's bunko, and this is what we want to tell you about today. So let's add the perio test to Dr. Aguilar's bag of tricks here and Dr. Mehta's bag of tricks.
All right, let's go back to the beginning, though. One of the most important things, obviously, we just talked about the ridge preservation with the proper graft of the hole where their tooth has been removed. But after that, so that area needs to heal up for 3 to 4 months after you've done the graft. But after that, then you need to have that area looked at, not with 2D, but with a 3D scan. What's really important that you do not rely on 2D x-rays, but 3D x-rays. And what is that? That it looks like a normal scan that you get, what's called a Panorex. And this allows us now with the 3D scan to allow Dr. Mehta to go in and look at the quality of the bone. And not only the quality of the bone, but able to know that with the 3D scan. It's computerized. It's a tomograph that you can break up into small segments. And now with the digitization of the mouth and the jawbone, you can know exactly where the nerves are.
Which picture do you want to show them here? 35, 36, 37?
Go to picture 37.
Okay, look at picture 37. This young lady dressed in blue.
And this brings up 37. This is another good point, that when you get these scans done. It's so important that you get, see that young lady's there getting ready to get a 3D scan. But for those of you in the know, look at the patient's neck. That patient should have a thyroid protection on, okay? You're going to get the 3D scan. Now, this is digital x-ray, and the exposure to radiation, because it is digital x-ray, is significantly less than the traditional x-ray. So this is, you're going to get a lot of benefit here. And again, yes, x-rays, we prefer not to have them, but in this case, it's an issue of risk versus benefit. And the benefit of this 3D scan is that you will now be able to look on a computer screen, and you'll be able to plan on a computer screen where exactly the implant needs to go, how to stay away from the nerves. And the most important thing is now that you can now place that implant in the perfect position, perfect to the right, left, on, you know, X, Y, Z axis, and stay away from the nerves. The other thing that allows you, because of this tomograph, that allows you to do is make a surgical guide. You don't have to freehand these anymore. Go to picture 39. On picture 39, that shows a surgical guide. Well, what's the benefit of a surgical guide? The surgical guide allows you to already, Dr. Mehta, ahead of time, has now designed on the computer and to exact measurements where he wants to have that implant placed, how he needs to drill the first hole into the bone. And so he knows how deep to go. That surgical guide then exactly tells him what angle to approach, because it's already done for him. It's already been done preset by the computer. So now the drill goes into the bone at exactly the right angle, exactly the right position, front to back, left to right, exactly the proper depth, and now he can now put the implant in exactly where it should be. And that's so important. He's not freehanding it. He's using a surgical guide. So you want to be able to eliminate all the risks associated, take away all the downside to these implants by using the 3D scan and by using the surgical guide. That is so important.
You were telling me cases where you have oral surgeons, guys that do these implants regularly, that don't use a surgical guide, that may not even use the 3D scan, that think you can just eyeball it. You've spoken to them on the phone and counseled them, and they don't use these devices, and then you get abutments. Okay, you get abutments that are hanging off in the wrong direction.
Correct.
And then you have to put crowns on those, and that becomes extremely difficult. Again, another thing that you and Dr. Mehta do that others don't do that I think makes a massive difference here. So we've got this surgical guide we talked about that is driven off these pictures, picture 37. That allows us to place that ceramic screw into the bone correctly after you determine that that bone is ready for
correct.
It. These are big, big steps. Big, big steps. Now, what, 3 months until you're ready to have that abutment put on?
On a lower.
6 months maybe on an upper.
Correct.
And then after that abutment is put in, you have to wait again, no?
No, after Dr. Mehta does the perio test at the end of the 3 months time frame, 6 months on the upper, Dr. Mehta will go in with the perio test. He will test the integrity of the osseointegration of the implant into the bone. At the end of that 3 months, he says, yes, you have totally osseointegrated properly. The perio test readings are where they need to be. Now it's time for you to go see Dr. Aguilera and have the abutment put in. But at the end of that 3 months, he says, no, I think we should go another month. Then you need to go another month. But now we have a way to objectively determine whether we are going to be ready to put the implant abutment in. Okay.
All right. So we're backtracking, but this is great because it gives the audience a chance to just hear it again. So let's go back all the way up now to that picture number 24. Dr. A is going to slide that abutment in. You looked at this picture a moment ago.
He's going to bond it in,
and now he's going to...
And then I will take an impression of that abutment in place. It's like your natural tooth, if you will. If you've gone into the dentist to have the tooth prepared for a crown, after the tooth is ground down, after we get the preparation of the stump, if you will, then an impression is taken. Then temporary is put in place, and then you have the impression is off to the lab where the crown is made by the laboratory. And then after the time period of anywhere from a couple of days to a couple of weeks, depending on what we're trying to accomplish, you come back, we take off the temporary, and then we put in the crown.
So let's look at picture number 43. There you see their zirconia implant with the abutment. And then on top there is that crown that Dr. A is talking about. And on the right, then you've got this implant in the jawbone with the abutment, with the crown placed on top of the abutment. Doc, you have a few things to say about the crown, the right way to do this and the wrong way to do this, all the ins and outs. Give us a few.
All right, so let's go back to that picture. That's fine. I think we had one earlier where we show the implant in between two natural teeth. But the point is simply this.
Sure, I'm going to get us to that.
The reason we would have preferred to have kept the
right
natural
here.
Tooth, right, there
you,
we go.
Yeah, you
this
wanted...
Go to picture 31. There we go.
Picture 31.
On picture 31, this is a premolar, number 12. So what we want to make sure is when we have the laboratory fabricate the crown that goes in here, is that the occlusion, how the teeth interdigitate, is so important. The one downside to an implant, and remember, anything that goes in the mouth, I don't care if it's from, you know, a filling to a crown or, you know, just an inlay, anything a man puts in the mouth, okay, is going to have an upside and a downside. There's no getting around to it. The Creator was showing off when he made teeth. So the bottom line is there is always an upside and there's always a downside. So what's the downside to the zirconium oxide implant, okay, or even a titanium implant? There is no periodontal ligament space. There is no periodontal ligaments. So you have... you're lacking that little kind of a shock absorber, the cushion. So a natural tooth kind of moves to side, up and down.
I just want to show them that periodontal ligament and this may be totally new to them, guys. So I want you guys to go all the way up to the top pictures and go to picture number 7.
Oh, 7, okay.
Let's go to picture number 7 because we got a blow up of the fibers of the periodontal ligament. Dr. A is saying when you stick that tooth in bone, it attaches through these very, very tough little ligaments called little fibers called the periodontal ligaments. On a natural tooth. But when you get that tooth pulled because of whatever reason, the oral surgeon goes up and in there and he starts scraping away all the periodontal ligament. He has to do that. That's standard of care. And then he scrapes away a little bit of bone. In addition to that, alveolar bone, to make sure that he's got all the potential infection and it's a clean slate. What Dr. A is saying now is, go ahead, Doc.
When you have an implant placed, you lose the periodontal ligament space. You lose the periodontal ligament.
Picture 31.
So now you have an implant that's screwed directly into the bone. There is no give. It's solid. And that's the crux of the problem. So the teeth on either side, number 11 and number 13.
Picture 31.
On picture 31, those teeth move up and down ever so slightly. For those of you in the audience, just take your fingers and take your front tooth. You can move it forward and backwards. You can push it up. You can feel the give on an implant tooth. On an implant, there is no give. So the occlusion has to be set up and adjusted to accommodate for that lack of give. So what you want then is the crown that's eventually going to go over that abutment in that picture 31. What you want is the crown to be adjusted so that when you put your teeth together, you just barely touch that crown. It's what we term light occlusion. So that when you chew, and now the forces on number 13 and on number 11 are much stronger and compressing the periodontal ligaments, that now number 12, the implant crown, comes into perfect balance. So now you have a perfect balance of the bite. And that's so important because if you go ahead and put it into normal, regular occlusion, and when you bite down, guess what? The number 12 doesn't compress to the level that number 13 and number 11 do. So it's so important that it gets adjusted properly.
And again, this is the whole point. If you really span the show today, if you really add the other four shows in, what have there been about 15, 20, 25 things? And I wouldn't say we just touched the surface. We got into it. But if you add up all the shows, there's a lot of things you have to know how to do right. And they're usually time dependent. It means you have to have someone that's taking their time. The minute you get these one-stop, quick fix, in-and-out sort of hamburger dental sorts of experiences where your dentist is running into 3 to 4 different rooms at the same time and throwing you their assistance, you are grossly increasing the incidence of failure because it usually means the dentist is setting themselves up in ways where they don't take the time to do all the things right. And guess what? Most of these better dentists charge a little bit more money. And you know something? You save money when you pay a little bit more money. Don't look for deals. I'm telling you this. Don't look for deals. Here's how I'd sum it up. Don't look for deals when it comes to your teeth. And number two, don't think that just because a dentist is a lot more expensive that you're getting good dental care. It's tough. You have to be educated. That's the purpose of the show. There's a lot of things he's doing here, Dr. Aguilar and Dr. Mehta, to make sure that you get them done correctly. And in addition to knowledge, it usually means you take your time. He's talking about setting the bite correctly, setting the occlusal surfaces at just the right contact, light contact, he's calling it, so you don't inflame your periodontal ligament. And he won't tell you, but I will, how many times he's had to intervene on behalf of implants that are done incorrectly on multiple levels, all pointing to how these points get skipped consistently today. We're not talking about rare occurrences. We're talking about common occurrences. Let me give you his number, 949-936-0022, 949-936-0022, a place to call if you want to get it done right because you don't want that hole in your face anymore and you're scared to do something about it and you're not sure which way to go. Between this show and last show, you should be set in a smooth direction. Okay. Let's take a look at a few other pictures here. I want you to go up to... picture number 4. That's Mo, Larry, and Curly. Do you guys ever remember Curly in the middle there? I thought that was fitting. We come from a tradition of pulling teeth out with as crude a set of events as that. And what happens, keep in mind, if you're living with these holes in your face, what really should you be thinking about? Once you have multiple extractions, you don't have teeth touching other teeth when you bite. And when teeth don't touch other teeth when you bite, you don't get force vectors up through the maxilla, into the ethmoid bone, into the sphenoid bone, and the whole way your head sits upon your upper cervical spine changes. And that will change the way the autonomic nervous system from the brain starts delivering intelligent actions, commands to your organ systems. So you got to think in terms of preserving the bite once you have multiple extractions. This is why we want to save the tooth if we can. But if you pull the tooth and you just figure, well, I pulled the tooth, I'm infection free because the tooth isn't there. And you've got 2 or 3 or 4 of these things, even if people aren't seeing them. Doc, how often do you see people, they're missing basically a whole quadrant?
Absolutely. It's something that happens gradually. They don't, you know, go in one day and say, I want all this quadrant taken out, which is, you know, 4 or 5 teeth. No, it happens gradually over the years. By the time they get into the 50s or 60s, now they have the situation where they have lost multiple teeth, but because they're afraid to make a move, whether should I have implants or should I have a bridge work, sometimes they can't even have a bridge work, that they end up in the situation where they are now in a semi-edentulous, if you will.
The bridge, I want to point out, the bridge is not going to fix the cranial problem. Those of you out there that have bridges, number one, bridges tie up your other teeth, especially if that bridge is crossing midline, which means when you bite, you don't get each tooth touching each other tooth, but individual from all the other teeth, so you don't get the right lines of force into the hypothalamus gland. That's a big problem. Bridges do not solve this. If you have extractions and you haven't resolved anything, you're just leaving the hole in your face, 2 to 3 holes, you're losing your cranial intelligence, we say. And again, once that happens, again, your head is going to shift. And these changes are, well, you don't notice them, but what you notice is the symptomology that derives itself. And doctors who specialize in this, the osteopaths, the chiropractors, the Rolfers, anybody that works in physical medicine is going to be able to lie you down on a table, touch your head, and feel whether or not your head is floating on your cervical spine or it's stuck. And do you know where you find it stuck regularly? Well, look at that guy in picture number two. Now, just common sense tells you, but I'll tell you right now, I've seen people, and so have you, Dr. Aguilera, with a mouth like that, go in and come out with 15 zirconium implants over 6 months. I've seen a number of people do this at dental clinics, even the college dental clinics. I'm talking about UCLA, USC. I've had students of mine in my classes in their 80s who walk in like this guy in number two and walk out 6 months later, and I watch them evolve this over a period of time, and I'm just in a position where I really don't want to say anything because it's just too much for them to bear at this point. And what are they left with? Everything we described. You know, I can't mention names, and I don't want to get too specific, but I have seen this so many times. And then 6 months later, a year later, 2 years later, and who's going to say it's because of 12 or 14 titanium implants? But something happens. Someone strokes. Someone gets a cancer. Somebody gets heart disease. And this is what Weston Price is talking about. This is real when we say titanium implants corrode. It's real when we say these biofilms add up. It's real when we say you start to lose your cranial rhythms if you don't take care of these things. And I wouldn't say this is at the forefront of medicine today, but it should be. So pat yourself on the back if you can follow this stuff and appreciate it, because a good tooth is 10 years of your life. This is our fourth show.
Correct.
Those of you who have been listening all along, we're going to do another two shows sometime over the next couple of months. We have to get to the bite. We have to get to the gums. And you guys are going to have your own CD. You take these shows, you put them together, and then you test it and experiment with it with more knowledge. Again, if you're lost in Tooth Fairyland, 949-936-0022. 949-936-0022. Take a step. Just for one hole in your face, make a gentle move. Give Penny a call. That's Dr. Aguilar's perfect office manager, in my opinion. Hopefully next Saturday, we'll have some sunshine. I don't know about you guys. I'm tired of the clouds, but I'm from New York, so that's a slanted opinion. All right, we'll see you next week. Dr. A, thank you so much. This
You're
is
so, well.
So informative and joyful. And I'll see you in about a month. Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.